Let's turn now to Hammurabi's governance of his kingdom. How could he ensure loyalty and exert control over such a large territory? And remember that no ruler had really been able to do this for very long before. So Hammurabi has a significant task ahead of him. Hammurabi made Babylon the political center of his lands. Any taxes that he required would be sent there. Local leaders would report to officials who had been chosen directly by Hammurabi, and they corresponded with the king himself. So he was a good manager in that he had a very good system of communications with his officials. These letters note the productivity of the king's lands. He now controlled enormous estates in Babylonia. Also, the tax collection and the supply of labor that the king needed. Hammurabi specifically engaged in a number of very large building projects, building and maintaining irrigation canals, also restoring and building new temples. So he required an almost constant supply of corvée labor, and his officials were supposed to supply this manpower from throughout his kingdom. We've already gotten a glimpse of Hammurabi's royal ideology with his use of the misharim, the construction of temples, and indeed these established functions of the king were the hallmark of Hammurabi's rule. Hammurabi drew specifically on the idea that he was a good shepherd of his people. He notes on an inscription that the dispersed people of the land of Sumer and Akkad, I gathered together, and I provided pastures and watering places for them. I made them live in peaceful dwellings. And so from this inscription, and there are many others that use this phrase of being a good shepherd, we see that Hammurabi takes a very protective sense of his subjects, and that he wants to make sure that they live happy, peaceful, and productive lives. Hammurabi also maintained close links with the gods, all of the gods, not just a specific deity that he tried to advance over other cults. And when we get to his laws, his very famous law code, we'll see that he lists numerous gods in the prologue. One way that a king could ensure his people were treated fairly was to oversee their justice. Hammurabi's law code, which is the longest surviving law code from Mesopotamia, supplies the best evidence for this aspect of Hammurabi's rule. The law code dates to the later years of Hammurabi's reign, and we can tell this by the list of cities that he claims owe allegiance to him. In the law code, Hammurabi writes that kings should guide his people correctly, judge their cases, and give decisions. May he remove the evil and the wicked from the land. May he make his people happy. We'll see how Hammurabi does this through his laws in a lecture shortly. Other letters note Hammurabi's interest in justice. He intercedes on behalf of his subjects in relatively minor matters. And these letters indicate for us that a king really did provide access to his subjects. If they felt that they had been wronged, whether it be a matter of a loan or some other injustice, they could write to the king and the king would respond. Hammurabi learned of a young man who had been enslaved when a father wrote him. He wrote, "My son disappeared 8 years ago, and I did not know if he was alive. I made funerary offerings for him as if he were dead. Now I was told that he is living in the house of a goldsmith. I went, but they hid him from me and kept moving him." Hammurabi responds, "Now I am sending you a soldier and an official. Let them go and bring back your son and the man who kept him in his house for 8 years. Have them brought to Babylon." And there Hammurabi would see them and he would adjudicate the matter. He would make sure that if the son had been enslaved illegally, that he would be restored. And probably, according to his law code, that there would be some punishment and penalty given to the father for the loss of his son.